Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, April 22, 2014. As the international community condemned rebel fighters for killing civilians in Bentiu, South Sudan's army confirms Mayom town is under control of rebels, saying the government forces made a tactical withdrawal.
Bentiu, or Unity State in general, is a fighting area, and the SPLA is just a matter of time will reestablish the control of the Unity State.
And President Kiir orders soldiers to stop erecting illegal roadblocks across the country.
The roadblocks are not allowed. We also condemn this, and we warn that those who will be caught practicing this will be severely punished.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A commission set up by the African Union to investigate human rights abuses committed during the conflict in South Sudan is visiting the country for the first time. The African Union Commission of Inquiry on South Sudan, led by former Nigerian President Olusegun Obasanjo, is scheduled to visit Juba this week, a visit that will come on the heels of the fresh fighting and deadly violence against civilians. In Unity State, UNMISS says opposition forces killed civilians last week when they recaptured Bentiu. In Bor, armed mob equipped with rocket-propelled grenades attacked a UN base, killing dozens of civilians who were sheltering there. In their two-week visit, members of the commission are set to meet with President Kiir and his cabinet, as well as members of the opposition, including former vice president turned rebel leader Riek Machar. The African Union Commission will also hold talks with UNMISS head Hilde Johnson and with South Sudan commander of the Presidential Guard, which was reportedly involved in clashes in Juba in mid-December, which touched off the conflict around the country. The commission plans to meet human rights groups, civil society, and church leaders during the visit, which runs through May 1st. South Sudan military officials acknowledge their forces lost Unity State Mayom town to anti-government forces yesterday, claiming their forces staged a tactical withdrawal from Mayom. But they say Unity State is still a war zone and anti-government forces should expect counter-attacks from government troops in days to come. For VOA News, Charlton Doki has this report from Juba.
Military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer did not admit defeat, declaring instead that the SPLA simply withdrew from Mayom without fighting.
It was a tactical retreat. However, Bentiu or Unity State in general is a fighting area, and the SPLA is just a matter of time will reestablish the control of the Unity State, or these areas of Bentiu and Mayom. Things will change soon.
Anti-government military spokesman Lul Ruai Kong says the South Sudan government does not usually admit defeat and says his forces overran a number of government-held positions in Jonglei State this morning.
I have just received some information now from Jonglei State saying our forces overran a number of military outposts, including the administrative headquarters of Du County. They overran Pajut, the administrative headquarters of Du County is called Marang, another place called Patwatai, and all of these places were overran in the morning.
Aguer says the SPLA is in full control of the oil fields in Unity State. Anti-government forces have stated that one of their goals is to take control of the country's oil fields and shut down production so that oil profits are not used to buy weapons. Yesterday, the UN mission in South Sudan accused anti-government forces of killing innocent civilians, including people who sought shelter in a marketplace and a mosque. UNMISS says when the anti-government forces recaptured Bentiu on April 15th, they targeted people based on their ethnicity. Aguirre insists government troops will do all they can to dislodge the rebels from all of the areas they control.
We will not allow that barbarism to continue in the area. SPLA is mandated by the Constitution to stop that act of barbarism, and it's a matter of time the SPLA will recontrol the area.
Anti-government fighters accuse pro-government forces of destroying bridges and other infrastructure in a bid to prevent rebel forces from advancing to areas under government control. Here again is rebel spokesman Lul Ruai Kong.
It is even on the Facebook. I saw the image of the bridge that are damaged. It is a bridge that connects Mayong with Warap. And it is, I think they are fearing that we might march on Warap, and they are trying to preempt that move by destroying the whole infrastructure that is connecting Mayong with Warap State.
Aguirre denies the allegation.
We cannot do that. That is just a cover-up. See, the rebels that have intention to blow the bridges.
As the accusations and counter-accusations continue, hundreds of thousands of civilians still feel too afraid to return home. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
President Salva Kiir has condemned last week's deadly attack on a UN camp that provides food and shelter to IDPs from Unity and Upper Nile states. The attack left nearly 60 people dead in Jonglei state capital Bor. Speaking during Easter prayers at St. Teresa's Cathedral in Kator, Mr. Kiir also instructed soldiers to stop roadblocks across the country which interfere with delivery of humanitarian aid. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Government officials say last week's attack on a UN camp was triggered by Nuer IDPs sheltering at the camp who celebrated the recapture of Bentiu by the rebels. A mob of armed youth forced their way into the camp and opened fire on the IDPs. President Kiir says his government will not tolerate attacks on innocent civilians by anyone.
This act was a very irresponsible act by very irresponsible people. We as the government, we condemned it. There was no reason at all to come and attack the innocent people in the UN camp. We don't like it at all, and we don't want this thing to continue happening.
Meanwhile, President Kiir also warned security forces against mounting illegal roadblocks for drivers of relief trucks or face serious consequences. He did not elaborate. UN and NGO officials have complained that soldiers and police have been searching relief trucks and collecting taxes from drivers as they deliver food and medical supplies to people who fled their homes during the fighting.
The roadblocks are not allowed. We also condemn this, and we warn that those who will be caught practicing this will be severely punished.
President Kiir has reportedly directed his defense, national security, and interior ministers to ensure all checkpoints are removed. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
A group of Kenyan activists in Nairobi that call themselves International Friends of South Sudan are asking the Kenyan government to send a peacekeeping force to South Sudan. They warn the situation in South Sudan could quickly descend into genocide if other countries do not get involved. Lucy Pony has the story for VOA from Nairobi.
Salmon Kamau, the global president of IFOS, says something needs to happen immediately to stop the killing of innocent civilians in South Sudan, no matter who is right or who is wrong.
This is another 1994 Rwandan situation. Massacre, ethnic cleansing, terror, political persecution, primitive use of weaponry, bloody civil war, whatever term you give it. Innocent lives are being lost meaninglessly, and there seems to be a conspiracy to keep quiet by everyone. We must stop this by using all means possible.
Kamau was speaking to members of the media and representatives from several civil society organizations in Kenya. Caleb Osora helped form IFOS 6 months ago. Before fighting broke out in South Sudan, he says the purpose of the group
is to champion the rights of the Southern Sudanese refugees who are suffering across East Africa. And then with that, we'll protect, you know, more refugees coming up in the near future. We don't want Eastern Africa to be having more refugees. We have Somalian refugees, so we are complaining of Al-Shabaab today. Every country is insecure because of Al-Shabaab. We are having more Southern Sudanese. Meaning, if we continue, you know, having more refugees in East Africa, we'd be having more terror groups coming up.
After fighting broke out in December, Kamau says the mission of the organization shifted to figuring out the best way to bring peace to South Sudan. He says even though the two sides signed a cessation of hostilities agreement in January, neither side is respecting the agreement. Kamau points to the deadly attack on the United Nations compound in Bor last week as the latest example of violence against civilians continuing with no government intervention. He says that's where Kenyan peacekeepers could make a difference.
Kenya must clearly state the reasons for sending any troops to the Republic of South Sudan, and these must be strictly under the set legal procedures. Such troops must only go there to uphold protection of civilians and not support the current regime, since that would amount to taking sides in the ongoing conflict.
Kamau also called on Kenyans to contribute clothes, food and money to the more than 34,000 South Sudanese refugees living in Kenya. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Nairobi.
Hundreds of South Sudanese youth met in Juba this week to talk about how young people from communities across the country can work for peace rather than join fighting. Mungume David Rakarinj has the story for VOA from Juba.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The beginning of the rainy season raises the risk of cholera and dysentery. These are infections of the intestine that cause cramps, severe diarrhea, dehydration.
James
and sometimes
Ladu Modi, who goes by the name Ladu Fanan, performed the song No More Slavery at today's event. That is James Ladu Modi, who goes by Ladu Fanan, performing his song No More Slavery at the youth event. He describes why he got involved today.
We need the people of South Sudan to come together. We are tired of war. I know there's a problem always in the family between a mother and a daughter, between a father and a son. But then we have to reconcile and we have to come together because there's no need again for us to fight.
Andrea Minala is the field program manager for the NGO Pax Christi, which organized today's event. He says they decided to target the youth so they would not continue to perpetrate South Sudan's cycle of violence.
It has really confused their mind. And we thought it is good. Let us do something to console them and try to streamline the way they can think towards nation building. Are they to sleep until they are misled by others, or let them know what the nation requires or asking them to do?
More than 500 young people gathered at Nyakon Culture Center for today's events, which included live music and drama performances from local groups. Youth activist Joseph Amanya says part of the reason for the current fighting is that young people, most of whom are unemployed, are easily influenced. He says they do not have a chance to get an education, and there are few job opportunities for them.
They think the government is specifically for certain people. They feel that they are not part of the government. They feel that they are not part of the system. So that is why it is very easy for somebody, for a politician, to lure young people to go and fight.
22-year-old Salwa Hamid says she feels the same way. She says she came today because she wants young people to have a bigger role in the country's affairs.
It is important because we're going to bring all the the heat inside our hearts, you know, all the problems we're facing, all the things we're supposed to be done and not yet done for us. And then you have to get to know that what other youth are facing, you know, because the problem is not only me facing it, all of us are facing it. So when we talk about it, we bring it out, we find a way forward for it.
20-year-old law student Dichi Godfrey says the only way to correct the deterioration.
We apologize for glitches in our show today. We are having a little bit of a problem in this studio. However, stay tuned. We'll bring more programmings to you shortly.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The beginning of the rainy season raises the risk of cholera and dysentery. These are infections of the intestine that cause cramps, severe diarrhea, dehydration, and sometimes even death. The diseases can be spread when floodwaters carry human waste. And even after the rain ends, the tiny organisms that cause the diseases can continue to live on in stagnant pools of water. That's why it's so important for you and your family not to eat contaminated food or drink bad water. Only drink bottled water or water that's been boiled or purified. Peel raw fruits and vegetables before eating them, or even better, cook them for at least 5 minutes and eat them while they're still hot. Finally, make sure you wash your hands with soap and water before eating. Taking these steps will help you and your family avoid serious disease.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an artist competition to keep South Sudanese youth focused on peace and no fighting. That story is coming up after this break.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should men and women have the same opportunities for jobs? Why or why not?
Men and women should be given the same opportunity in terms of job, because they sit in the same class and they are given the same opportunity in education. So I think when it comes to job, they should be given the same opportunity.
Yes, I believe so, because I believe the opportunities given to each one of them help to run the families, and women have a greater burden than even men do. So if you give men an upper hand than women, it means women will be left with a larger burden, lacking finances, because most men don't give their women enough money to run the family.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today, we are talking about South Sudan's health services. Government officials say they are optimistic foreign aid workers can continue to provide health services to people across the country despite the ongoing fighting. But humanitarian aid workers say under the current circumstances, their work is extremely difficult and nearly impossible to deliver their services to people where fighting continues. Mungume Debs Rakarinch has the story for VOA from Juba.
Minister of Health Riek Gaykok said earlier this month that every citizen in the country should have access to health services despite the conflict.
As a government, as a matter of policy, we said NGOs must cover the whole country, irrespective of who is controlling that area. The services to our people must continue.
But Rafael Gorgeo, the head of Doctors Without Borders in South Sudan, says that is not always the case. He says it can nearly be impossible to work in some areas of the country, specifically parts of Unity, Upper Nile and Jonglei. Those three states have seen the most violence since fighting broke out in mid-December. He says the presence of armed fighters for both the government and the opposition in those areas makes the humanitarian group's job extremely dangerous.
We have these positive messages at the highest level of the government and the opposition, but sometimes we feel that these messages are not translated enough into the reality of the ground. So it's how the message can be passed up to the very last soldiers to allow humanitarian assistance to function.
Gorgeo says last month, MSF was forced to close down operations in the Upper Nile state capital, Malakal, for several days after their facilities were looted during fighting in the town. He says some of the patients who could not flee or foot were killed in their beds. Others fled to remote areas where they cannot access health care. He says as a result, people are suffering, especially women, children and elderly people. The United Nations Children Fund is warning up to 50,000 children could die from malnutrition this year unless medical care improves. He says there are places where they cannot even assess the situation because they can't reach those places.
There is one area that we are very concerned about. It's definitely South Unity, a location between basically Bantu and Lair and Mayendit, where people have been displaced and are still in the bush. We still have a team in the bush trying to treat people in the bush. And they are stuck in the bush, in the swamp.
Gorgeo says he does not know how many people they are in remote areas or when NGOs will be able to reach them. For VOA News, I am Mugumedes Ruakarinj in Juba.
A new report says organized crime, government corruption, and militias are all linked to elephant poaching and the illegal ivory trade. It says poachers in Zimbabwe, Tanzania, Sudan, and Kenya move across borders with near impunity. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
The report is called Ivory's Curse, the militarization and professionalization of poaching in Africa. It's a joint effort by the conservation group Born Free USA and C4ADS, a nonprofit organization that analyzes the drivers of conflict and insecurity. Adam Roberts is Born Free USA Chief Executive Officer.
For years, Born Free USA and other animal advocates have campaigned against the trade in elephant ivory, but on conservation and animal welfare concerns. And we wanted to find a little bit more detail about who was behind the ivory trade. It's not just enough to say it's criminal syndicates, nefarious profiteers. We wanted to know who was really behind it so that we can try and get governments around the world to do more to crack down.
Robert says Born Free needed some help in gathering that kind of information.
That's one of the reasons that we commissioned C4ADS to do the report for us, because I think the breadth of our capabilities within the conservation community are pretty much limited to conservation, but having a defense analyst that looks at the militarism behind all of these poaching incidents gives them access to information that we wouldn't otherwise have.
The report provides regional case studies of the ivory trade. For example, in Sudan, the report says government-allied militias complicit in the Darfur genocide fund their operations by poaching elephants. But it goes on to say that poaching occurs hundreds of miles outside of Sudan's borders. In Somalia, the report blames the militant group Al-Shabaab and criminal networks who poach in neighboring Kenya. The weapons they use, it says, come from local security forces.
It's not going to come as a shock to anyone that Somalia is implicated in the ivory trade. And again, much like Sudan, you have these actors that are able to move cross borders from Somalia to different countries in the region. But probably the biggest part of that, though, is the inability of some of those surrounding countries, those neighboring countries, to deter the ivory trade from the people in either Sudan or Somalia because they lack the resources to do so.
The report says organized crime in Mozambique is willing to battle the South African Army and park rangers to poach rhino horn. In Gabon and the Republic of Congo, it says forest exploitation has allowed East Asian organized crime to come to the region and poach Central Africa's elephants. And Robert says Zimbabwe continues to be a poaching hotspot.
Partly what's happening with poaching in Zimbabwe is a result of the political situation where you have a regime that's been in place for so long that we feel is complicit in the ivory trade because of giving impunity to the actors involved in the ivory trade in the country, that it's very hard to get a handle on what's happening. You know, in 1997, when the international ban on trade in elephant ivory was first undermined, one of the countries that was behind that was Zimbabwe, and the meeting, the international meeting where that happened, was held in Harare.
The Born Free CEO says combating poaching requires a coordinated strategy all along the ivory trade chain.
So it's not enough to talk about demand reduction in Asia, which could take years and years to accomplish. And it's not just about putting boots on the ground, so to speak, and equipping rangers. You have to look at all of the different choke points where you can make an impact, including the shipping routes.
Roberts calls the report a first step. He says he hopes it will encourage defense and foreign affairs officials to get involved. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Dozens of primary school students took part in an arts competition last week in Wau. Organizers say they wanted to give young people something productive to do while shifting their attention away from fighting, which has claimed lives of thousands and uprooted nearly a million people from their homes. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Wau.
12-year-old Nergis Andrea says she has learned about the importance of the proper hygiene in school and has submitted to the competition a series of pictures she drew which encourage people to wash their hands frequently.
If you shake your hand with someone, you must wash your hand because there are diseases we get through handshakes. And if you touch your body, you cannot start eating immediately.
Germana Zakaria runs the arts activities of Western Bagazal, Minister of Education. She says the main goal for the competition is to encourage students to develop their artistic side in whatever way they want.
Every child has talent and something inside, but they are not able to express themselves. This includes drawing and cultural activities rather than academics. We want to remove the idea of war from the minds of children and bring out talents that they have within, so they are able to express what they have.
The Ministry of Education is sponsoring the first-time event at their headquarters, providing papers, pencils, pens and stand for the children. The children are told to consult with the organizers about what they want to create and then draw whatever they like. Zakaria says when the competition ends today, all of the students will receive awards. 15-year-old Santino Natale Santino is in a primary five and says he has never really created an art project before.
I came here to draw pictures and to learn from my elders. We came as boys and girls together. I drew a picture of my school to see if I am able to create an image of my environment. I feel happy when I look at it.
The students came from 16 different schools around Wau. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Love Your Neighbor by Benjamin Laxine.
Makazi di mojira, take saki saki. Mata ali sujira, take kan meskin. Mata dali majira, take fajal besi. Mukura tebiri jalo. Big
We have been listening to Benjamin Laksin with that song asking you to love your neighbor. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Saki saki, mata ali sujiran.